All right, let's jump right into this deep dive on the Song of Songs. We've got some intriguing excerpts from Dr. Lloyd Carr's lectures on the Song of Songs. And, well, I have to admit, this one's always kind of baffled me.
Yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher, isn't it?
I mean, it's right there in the Old Testament, part of the wisdom literature, but it's a love koem. So how do we even begin to unpack this?
Well, I think a good place to start might be the question of authorship. You know, is it really King Solomon, like the title says? Dr. Carr seems to lean toward the idea that it's more like it's attributed to Solomon.
Because of his reputation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was known for his wisdom, his wealth, and, well, let's not forget his rather extensive collection of wives and concubines.
700 wives and 300 concubines. I mean, talk about a busy guy. But so, are you saying Solomon's just like a symbol of love and wisdom, even if he didn't actually write it?
Exactly. You know, Dr. Carr points out these references to Solomon's vineyard in the song. And he suggests that maybe it's playing with this idea of, you know, Solomon's vast holdings.
Versus the woman's more personal vineyard.
Yeah, right. Like it's a contrast between these different kinds of relationships. You know, Solomon's got this huge, sprawling vineyard, but the woman's is something more intimate, maybe symbolic.
I like that. So we're not just talking about grapes here, but maybe different ways of experiencing love.
Exactly. And there's this other reference to Solomon. It really jumped out at me. The grand wedding procession in chapter three. I mean, it's like something out of a movie, right? Luxurious palanquin, 60 warriors as bodyguards, Solomon in his wedding crown.
Wow, now that's a wedding. So what's Dr. Carr's take on that scene?
Well, he even suggests it might be depicting Solomon's marriage to, get this, an Egyptian princess.
Oh, wow, a royal power couple. But how does this lavish scene fit in with the rest of the poem?
That's where Dr. Carr gets really insightful. He suggests that maybe this royal imagery is intentionally juxtaposed with the more personal, intimate love that, you know, the woman in the song seems to value.
So like the poem's exploring different facets of love, from like the grandeur of a royal wedding to something quieter and more intimate.
Exactly. It's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, it is. So even if we don't know for sure who wrote the song, we can see how Solomon's figure adds this like extra layer of meaning to it, right?
Absolutely. And speaking of layers of meaning, you know, how do we even start to interpret this ancient text? Dr. Carr lays out four main approaches, but he seems to favor what he calls the natural approach.
Okay, now you've got my attention. Break this down for me.
So the first three are allegory, technology, and drama. With allegory, you know, it's like the song is this coded message where everything stands for something else. Typology tries to connect figures and events in the Old Testament to something in the New Testament. And then the drama approach, well, that sees the song as like a play, you know, with characters and ads and everything.
Okay, I can see how those approaches might be tempting, especially with a text like this one. But why does Dr. Carr go for the natural approach? What makes it different?
Well, he seems to find the other methods, I don't know, maybe a bit too restrictive, you know, like they try to force the text into a box. But with the natural approach, you just experience the song as like these beautiful love poems. You appreciate the raw emotions, the vivid imagery, you know, all the messy complexities of relationships.
So no hidden messages or theological codes. We just let the words speak for themselves, kind of like experience it on a gut level.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like this approach really resonates with the modern audiences.
Okay, I'm starting to get it. But you know, if the Song of Songs is simply about human love and desire, why is it in the Bible? I mean, right there next to all those laws, prophecies, and historical accounts, it seems like a bit of a strange fit, you know?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? And well, Dr. Carr tackles that head on, but I think we'll have to wait till part two to get into that.
All right, so we're back and still trying to wrap my head around this natural approach to the Song of Songs. If it's all about, you know, earthly love and desire, what makes it sacred? Why is it in the Bible?
That is the question, isn't it? Well, Dr. Carr suggests that, you know, maybe it's the very fact that it's included in the Bible, you know, alongside those laws and prophecies, that elevates human love. Like it's saying that our experiences of love and intimacy, they're not separate from the divine. They're reflections of it.
Okay, so not just a secular love poem that happened to sneak into the Bible.
Right. And don't forget, the Song of Songs is categorized as wisdom literature, right? It's all about those big questions of life.
Yeah, like how to live a good life, navigate relationships, all that. So the
Exactly.
song is offering wisdom about love, but not in like a rule-based kind of way, more like it's exploring the actual experience of love, you know? All the messy bits and all.
Yeah, that's it. Dr. Carr really emphasizes that. He talks about how the song, it embraces both the joys and the struggles of love.
Like you see the passion, the longing, but also jealousy, insecurity, even frustration.
Yeah. It's a really honest portrayal of what it means to be in a relationship.
And that's what makes it so refreshing, right? I mean, so often religious texts present this like idealized version of love, the perfect union. But the Song of Songs, it gets real, you know? It's like, hey, love's not always pretty.
Exactly. It normalizes all those emotions that come with love. It's a pretty powerful message, I think, for anyone who's ever been in a relationship.
Yeah, totally. It's like the song is giving us permission to, like, feel the full range of our emotions, to admit that love isn't always easy or picture perfect.
Exactly. And that even in those tough moments, those messy moments, you know, there's still something sacred there, something profoundly human about that connection between two people who choose to love each other.
Now, okay, we've been talking about the themes, you know, love and desire and all, but what about the structure of the song itself? I mean, it doesn't really seem to follow a straight narrative, does it? How does Dr. Carr make sense of that?
He points out that it's more like a tapestry woven together from all these different voices, you know, like a collection of poems or vignettes that create this whole mosaic of love. He doesn't get too deep into the structural analysis in these excerpts, but he does point to some, you know, motifs and themes that give the song its unique character.
Motifs? Like what?
Well, one of the biggest ones is this idea of searching and finding. The lovers are always looking for each other, physically and emotionally. You know, they're apart, they're reunited, expressing their longing. It's like a dance, you know, this push and pull between distance and intimacy.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. That feeling of wanting to be close to someone, needing them. It's so relatable.
Exactly. And then there's all the nature imagery. Dr. Carr seems really into that. I mean, the song is full of flowers, fruits, animals, landscapes, and they're often used to, like, evoke the beauty of the lovers' bodies, their love for each other.
So using the natural world as a metaphor for their love.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. And it speaks to this celebration of the physical world, you know, the senses, the beauty of bodies. It's not afraid to be sensual and erotic, which, of course, has made it a bit controversial over the centuries.
Oh, I bet. I mean, it's not exactly what you'd expect from a religious text, right? It's like the song is saying, hey, God made our bodies and our desires. Let's enjoy them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, kind of. And by doing so, it's reclaiming that goodness of creation, you know, our physical selves, the pleasure we experience through our senses.
Okay, I'm with you so far. So the natural approach makes us appreciate the Song of Songs as this, like, celebration of human love in all its messy glory. But even if we accept that it's primarily about earthly love, are there, like, any deeper meanings we can get from it? Does Dr. Carr talk about that at all?
Well, even though he leans towards the natural approach, he doesn't totally rule out the possibility of symbolic meanings. He suggests that, you know, even if it's mainly about human love, it can still give us insights into our relationship with God.
Okay, now I'm really curious. How so?
Well, think about all that intense longing and desire that the lovers express for each other. That same yearning can be seen as, like, a metaphor for our soul's longing for God.
I see what you mean. Like, it's tapping into this universal human experience that goes beyond any one relationship. We all have this need for connection, for belonging, for something that makes us feel whole.
Exactly. And even if we don't, you know, assign some specific allegorical meaning to every little thing, we can still appreciate how the song uses the language of love to evoke something, well, something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we can experience love on different levels, right? See the beauty in our earthly relationships, but also recognize that same longing in our own, like, spiritual journeys.
That's a great way to put it. And that's what makes the Song of Songs so powerful, so enduring. It speaks to those universal human needs. Love, connection, and something that, well, something that transcends us.
This has been great, but I'm eager to hear more about what Dr. Carr has to say about, you know, some of the challenges of interpreting this text. It's not always easy, is it?
Oh, not at all. And Dr. Carr definitely acknowledges that. There's so much to unpack. Should we dive into that in part three?
Let's do it. All right. So we're back and ready to really get into some of the, well, the trickier parts of the Song of Songs, right? I mean, it's not always the easiest poem to figure out. Does Dr. Carr talk about that at all?
Oh, absolutely. He's very upfront about the, you know, the challenges and the ambiguities, even for those who, like, prefer that natural approach.
Yeah. I mean, like, who are the main characters and how does their relationship actually play out? It's not always clear, is it?
Nope. Not at all. There are all these different voices and perspectives and the storyline. Well, it's not exactly linear.
It's more like, I don't know, a kaleidoscope or something.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, some scholars see it as a pretty straightforward love story, you know, just a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But others think there might be multiple voices.
Oh, interesting.
Or even, get this, a love triangle.
Ooh, juicy. That would definitely add a whole other dimension to things.
That would, wouldn't it? But it just goes to show that, you know, even when you try to read the Song of Songs in a, like, straightforward way, there's still room for different interpretations.
And maybe that's part of what makes it so, well, so aging is like the song is reflecting back our own ideas about love, you know?
Exactly. We each bring our own like experiences and baggage to the table that shapes how we see things.
Absolutely. And I think Dr. Carr really encourages that. Like he wants us to wrestle with those ambiguities, ask the tough questions.
Yeah. Find our own meaning in it.
Exactly. It's not the kind of book that just hands you all the answers, you know? You have to work for it a bit.
It does make you think.
It does, and feel your way through it. Maybe even like embrace the mystery a little bit.
That's a great point. I mean, it's a good reminder that sometimes the most important things in life, you know,
yeah,
you can't really put them into words. You just have to experience them.
It's like the difference between like reading about love in a book and actually falling in love, you know?
Perfect analogy. And the Song of Songs, it invites us to do that, to really dive into that lived experience.
To really savor it, all the good and the bad. So for our listeners, what would you say is like the biggest takeaway from all of this? What do you think Dr. Carr would want us to remember?
I think he'd want us to approach the Song of Songs with, you know, an open mind.
Yeah.
And a willing heart to let ourselves, you know, really connect with the emotions, the beauty of it, to find our own meaning in this, you know, this ancient celebration of love.
So well said. And maybe even though to be a little bit daring, to not shy away from the sensuality, the eroticism. To see that as something, you know, beautiful and joyful, too.
Absolutely. Because love, in all its forms, it really is a powerful thing. It connects us to each other, to ourselves, and, well, maybe even to something bigger than ourselves.
What a beautiful way to wrap up our deep dive into the Song of Songs. Thank you so much for sharing Dr. Carr's lectures with us. This has been really enlightening.
My pleasure. And hey, maybe this will inspire some of our listeners to, you know, pick up the Song of Songs themselves and see what they discover.
That's what we like to hear. Until next time, keep those deep dives coming.
527.